How are you?
Good.
No, I'm in downtown Seattle.
I take the sales tax.
Good evening. Yes, I can. I want to welcome you all to this joint meeting of the Kirkland City Council and the Redmond City Council. We are so pleased to have you here today. And rather than do a roll call, a formal roll call, we're going to do some introductions. I just want to announce, first of all, though, that Mayor Marchione of Redmond and Councilmember Doreen Marchione of Kirkland both are absent tonight due to a family situation. So, but we are so pleased to have your Mayor Pro Tem, Richard Cole.
Well, I want to thank you for inviting us down tonight. Thank you for the goodies. It's exactly 2 years ago since we met with you last time, and too long as far as we're concerned. So I'll turn it back to you.
Thank you very much. So we have a short agenda. We have a couple of presentations that go with two of the items. The presentations are short, which gives us a lot of time for discussion. So I guess I'll turn it over to our first issue, which is, our first issue will be the Metro, it's okay, I'm reading, I got it, we're cool. It's been a long day, this is my third meeting, but we will get to the introductions. I just want to remind you that we will go on to item number four, which is the Metropolitan Parks District. So let's go around and introduce each other.
And can I ask, Madam Mayor, that we also have the staff introduce themselves?
I think that's a wonderful idea.
Cool. So, Penny Sweet.
John Stillen.
Kim Allen.
Hank Myers.
Bob Sternoff.
Pat Vache.
Jennifer Schroeder.
Marilyn Beard.
Dave Asher.
Amy Wallen.
Hank Margeson.
David Carson.
Jessica Greenway.
Richard Cole.
Joan McBride. And should we start with the city clerk?
Robin Jenkinson, City of Kirkland. Tracy Dunlap. Jane Christensen with the Redmond Mayor's Office. Carrie Height, Deputy Director for Parks and Human Services with Kirkland.
Hi,
Colleen Kelly. I'm the Human Services Manager for the City of Redmond.
Katrine Rice, Management Analyst in Parkland.
Erin Lundhart, Kirkland Intergovernmental Relations. Sherry Anderson, Human Services Coordinator.
Rob Odell, Planning Director for Redmond.
Michelle McGee, City Clerk for Redmond.
Mike Fisher, Observer from Brendan.
Olson, Police Department.
Thank you very much. We realize that those introductions may not come across on our film, but thank you very much. We just certainly didn't want you all to run up and down to the microphone. So with that, Jenny, would you like to take over our first issue, the Metropolitan Parks District?
You bet. And again, welcome. I have just a few slides to complement the report that was in your agenda packet this evening and to give you maybe a little more visuals to some of the information in that packet. As it reads in the statute, it can be a Metropolitan Park District can be formed for really a complete park system, whether it's acquisition, development, management, and operation of parks and recreation facilities, programming, and it even includes parkways and boulevards. The history, 1907 is when our state enacted legislation to form MPDs, and it was limited to actually a population of 5,000. For many a year, Metropolitan Parks of Tacoma was the only MPD in our state. In 2001, there was a legislative task force that was formed because the issue of not having enough revenue to support parks and recreation is not something new to our state. And in that report, one of the tools they felt was available if the language would be amended to the MPD did in fact occur with the 2002 legislation. The statute was amended to make it more feasible and flexible of how you could form an MPD and how you might want to use it, how the boundaries could be formed, what would be the governance. My terminology, and I know your Parks Director Craig Larson might have also used a similar way to describe a regional where you might have a county, a city, and two different cities. All that could be one big boundary to define your MPD. Or it could be a portion of a section of a county. There's no limitation of how you could draw your circle and saying, here is our boundary for our Metropolitan Park District. Different ways to govern it. You could just say, we're going to have an independent five-member Board of Commissioners. That would be on your proposition. It would set up the how much you want to have the tax levy, as well as indicate who would be your electeds that would be running for those positions. It could be your existing council if, in fact, the boundary was only in one of those colored areas, whether it was just within the city limits or maybe it's just a county. The councils of that jurisdiction could be the governance body. Or you can have a combination, where in this example, where three different entities involved, it could be participation from each jurisdiction could be sitting on that five-member board. Or you could have what we call a local model, where it's just within your same city limits. In that situation, your governance choices are, again, it could just be that city council could serve as the governing body. And then it would be treated almost like you have your utility districts in your cities right now, where it is just really a funding mechanism in a line item of your budget for that program. Or again, you could elect that you want it governed by an independent Board of Commissioners. And again, that would be a five-member board. Since the 2002 legislation was amended, there's been, as of this year, 12 additional park districts that have come online. Most of them have used it as a way to save their existing parks and recreation departments. A couple have used it as a mechanism to fund and save the pools in their community. Des Moines is a recent example, as well as you just say, William Shore, Clallam County, used that this very mechanism to be able to keep their pool open and funded. It's not used for anything else. There's a lot of resources available, whether it's the statute itself or municipal research. And if you're curious, so what would that mean in your packet? And I described that this legislation allows you to set the levy rate as high as 75 cents per thousand assessed value. An example of that extreme shows you what each of our communities would calculate to, which is a significant amount. Probably, I know for me, it's more than my budget just for our department alone. But if you were to use this for other purposes, whether it's a discussion of is there a joint project, you could see that there is some interest when you look at this particular legislation and what it allows. It is within the junior taxing district. It's about fourth on that listing. And to just go back to that slide, so for a $500,000 home, if you were to look at a calculation based on the maximum that you can set for the rate, it would be $375 per household, or about $3,125 a month. So some questions that you might want to discuss tonight to help with this discussion is there a joint project? I know each of our communities have aging forward thrust pools. That isn't going to go away. We know we're both surrounded by major bodies of water, and keeping our youth and even adults to be good swimmers is a public safety concern, as well as a recreational an opportunity. And we know that there's the competitive swimming as well in our schools, that even those pools that they use are at risk. Community centers, big ticket item. And I know we had last couple of years been looking at this same opportunity for our community. It keeps coming back as an interest for our community to have this. It's very limited of how much indoor recreation space we have, so it has been something we've been looking at. But just the building alone has been estimated to be about a $42 million project, and so we know that is a big item, whether or not our community can support or not on its own. And as we know, parks and recreation departments, we are constantly seeing the challenge of reducing our budgets. And so a question to pose that I pose is this a mechanism that at some point might be just the future of how our departments are funded? It's definitely a tool that we are seeing many communities looking at as an alternative to give to their community an option to vote for that. And again, if just a reminder where it is on the junior taxing districts, it is fourth in that hierarchy. So you have limited time to really discuss this. I just wanted to give you a few additional slides to complement the memo. And if there's any other questions, I'll turn it back to the mayor.
Okay, some discussion. Well, I see some hands going up. Mr. Asher?
Just a real quick on the dollars that that you brought out. Is that pre-annexation?
Yes.
So that'll change upward.
Correct.
Some material amount, I would imagine.
Right, yeah. Thank you for that clarification.
Thanks.
Deputy Mayor Sweet?
My question is a newbie's question, which is, of the list of junior levies or taxing districts, which ones are we now using? Any of them?
Yeah.
Hospital.
Right.
EMS.
No, but for
port.
Port, yeah, the port.
EMS.
Lead.
That's right.
And we do not have a cemetery. We don't have a cemetery or a parks and recreation or a fire district for Kirkland. Okay. For Redmond, that might be a little bit different.
Other questions or our thoughts? Yes, sir.
Well, thoughts. When we met here 2 years ago, I think the council, well, I don't think I remember, brought up this issue of looking at maybe doing a project together, because just as you said, it's in the $40 to $50 million range, and there's certainly no way for Redmond or I think Kirkland to be able to afford something like that. So this is an alternative way of financing in that I know I'm at least interested in, you know, hearing what other people think about it and see if it might work. It's certainly a need for the both communities, and we're not against bringing in some Amish or other cities if that was necessary too. But I think this makes a very natural boundary since we share so much land. But be interested in hearing other folks' thoughts.
Your comments, Mr. Stern?
Yeah, one of things that has been discussed in a couple meetings, and we started when we had our meeting with your council a couple years ago, was bringing in other public entities as well, that the hospital, Lake Washington Technical College might be partners
school
as
district.
Well. School district, yeah, so the burden isn't just ours. So I would still like to pursue that. But,
yes, sir, Mr. Carson.
And the other thing that we've talked about in Redmond is this idea of also including portions of the county that we think might be interested in, because we really have a tight border on the east side. I mean, it's, you know, really close to our downtown core where it becomes rural, and so I think there's potentially opportunities to spread it out even beyond what you've discussed there, because I think, you know, the more we can spread spread it out and provide the benefits to that circle, the easier it's going to be for us to actually do this. So
I think that our thought was to try and keep proximity such that, you know, you don't have people driving from a long ways away, because then it loses a little
sure.
The if you got to think about it, then it may be too far. So that was kind of why we're trying to figure out where's ground zero maybe, and try and focus on the potential partners in that area. So.
Sure. Anyway, I think the price tag just is one of those things that everybody looks at and says, wow, we really need, you know, as many partners as is feasible. Because if you can't pass it, there's no point in bothering trying it. But, you know, if you think you can bring in partners that will, come on board and push that to make it happen, then that's, you know, it's a pragmatic thing as well as, you know, what can we do as two cities. So
Ms. Allen and then Ms. Wallen.
Yeah, well, I think it's a fabulous idea. I think that the economies of scale really could pencil out here. And I know that in Redmond we've done some community outreach on kind of, you know, visioning on what we want our park system to look like and what the folks who live in Redmond would like. And the Aquatic Center bubbles up to the top routinely. This is something that just, you know, it has a great deal of interest, and there's a big need, and certainly our pool is
on life support.
It would be a very kind way to describe it. Yeah, certainly, nothing even resembling the aquatic center. But I guess the question that I have is, how would these other entities, like the school districts and that sort of thing, interface with the district itself? They can't be members of the district or partners. I just wondered what the interface would look like in bringing in these other entities.
Well, the boundary, for one, whether you'd want to have, like, the complete school district as part of the boundary. As far as governance, I believe when I was talking with Craig is that, for the example where you might have the cities and the county, you could either elect to have the makeup of the board be members of each of those areas. So governance, and so as far as the city and the county, and then if it's a five-member board, I think the two, if it's just, let's say it's just Redmond and King County, that's really the easy example, then there could be five, there's a five-board commissioner, so two from each jurisdiction, and then those four decide on appoint the fifth member. So whether that fifth member is a citizen representative or the school district, that might be something that could be looked at. Otherwise, it would just be the boundary would be could be consistent with the school district, could be an option.
Yeah, but only municipalities can be members of the district. Is that right?
County members or city.
Right. Well, I need to put counties into that as well. Okay, thank you.
And Ms. Wallen?
I would be really interested in this as an ongoing, as far as the future goes, way of maintaining our parks, because we've talked about how the cost of personnel and inflation on supplies and equipment and all of that stuff keeps going up more than our ability to raise more revenue. And we have a wonderful parks inventory in Kirkland, but we're having some trouble maintaining. So I would, especially as Councilmember Allen said, if we could realize economies of scale in taking care of what we have in the future through this model, I would be interested in exploring that.
Mr. Cole, and then Mr.
I was just going to say, to address you, I have this friend who happens to have a chunk of land that happens to be in the county today that's about a few feet from my border and a few feet from your border. Mm-hmm. But somebody like that, that's how somebody else who was on that list could participate if they wanted
exactly.
to.
Exactly. They could contribute some land, of course.
Mr. Murchison.
Well, I like the concept. When you're talking about big ticket items, such as an aquatic center or recreational or community type center, from a joint operational perspective, if you get into, and I grew up in Tacoma, I didn't even realize that they had a metropolitan district since 1907. I wasn't around then to witness the signing of the legislation, although it feels like it sometimes. But that is for everything. I mean, that takes care of soup to nuts, essentially. And I think in our vision, what we in Redmond were looking at was something along the lines of, one of these bigger items that we can't go it alone. I mean, I don't think anybody can go it alone with an aquatic center or some sort of a community center, something like that. They're just beyond the scope. They're just too big, too expensive. And so we're going to need to pull together. And so along those lines, I see this having some huge benefit. Plus, it's been previously mentioned, there are folks who live right outside our borders who are in the county who would benefit, and it might be good to include them in this process.
Okay. Mr. Asher?
So the duration of this kind of assessment, is it limited in the statute?
It can be permanent.
Okay. So what would, a quarter of what we demonstrated up there bond? I think we took a small piece of it to see what small amount of it would bond.
Do come up to the mic.
I think we're really close to being able to being in the target for the capital.
You are. If between Redmond and Kirkland you can generate something on the order of $18 million at 75%, that would be something like $4.5 million at a quarter of that. So at a little less than 20 cents, and that would support $50 million worth of debt, roughly.
Deputy Mayor Sweet?
I guess my comment is, you know, I'm torn between what Councilmember Wallen and Councilmember Margeson were talking about. On the one hand, I'm very concerned about the future of our existing parks and our ability to maintain them at the quality level that our population has gotten used to and expects. At the same time, gosh, I'd like an aquatic center. and so would our citizenry. And I think maybe this is one of those opportunities for us to move forward with some kind of a hierarchy of need or some analysis to sort of, you know, how a balance for me, and I'm not sure what the condition of your parks budgets and such are, you know, compared to Kirkland, or even what the overall costs with them are associated. But I'd like to see some data at some point to point us in the right direction.
Other questions? I have a question. So the idea might be that a metropolitan park district would build, let's say, an aquatic center and then also provide the maintenance and the budgets for two cities. Is that?
There's options. We're not necessarily suggesting, but an option could be is it something where the two cities want to merge and be one major provider of those services? Is it something that each just want to use as a tool for their own jurisdictions? Or is it something to combine, and you can still have, in looking at what you're, you still have the ability to put out voter-approved debt. So
it could just be for the aquatic center.
Yes,
the two cities working together to the aquatic center. It wouldn't have anything to do with park maintenance of each city. That would still be.
Right.
So that's
it could be written,
as well.
Proposed as for one special service only.
Mr. Asher and then Mr. Carson.
I would suggest we give a charge to the staffs to go forth and look at options and think boldly about what we could do, and because we'll obviously carve it up before it's over, but at least it sounds like it's worth talking about and at least looking at options.
Mr. Carlson?
Well, I think the paradigm we've been contemplating mostly is just like a special facility like that. I don't think we've thought, you know, merging parks, you know, departments and so forth, which, you know, it, as far as the numbers, it may actually be a wiser thing to do that in the long term. I guess it kind of depends on existing budgets and what those look like. And maybe Mr. Cole can speak to kind of our parks budget's pretty sound, and we've got a lot of inventory to develop, and so that we have some challenges too. So,
Ms. Greenway and Mr. Cole.
I'm curious, the list of recent MPDs that you showed us, do you know any details about were those project oriented or more ongoing maintenance oriented? Were they all proposals that went before voters and were approved in some way?
They all have to go before the voter. Majority of them were for complete park and recreation systems. There are some that are just for a single purpose, and that single purpose has been consistently for a pool.
Okay. And may I just ask a follow-up question? So you're saying so all the ones that were either 2009 or 2010, you're saying most of those were organized and approved by voters for ongoing maintenance of parks?
Maintenance and operation, acquisition, development, for a complete system. So everything that we do today, but it has a dedicated funding source, so it doesn't compete with any other department. That's one, as a park professional, it's a very attractive benefit of the program, I'll be quite honest, not to name any particular.
And does the dedicated funding go on forever?
It can be permanent, unless if for some reason you want to declare a sunset, but that wouldn't necessarily apply in this. The legislation is written as it may be permanent.
Ms. Allen, then Mr. Zernoff, then Mr. Myers.
Richard, go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I was going to just comment on what David and Hanger said. I think that Redmond's vision has been a more limited one for a special purpose. However, having heard some of the discussion here and heard some of the facts, I'd be interested in seeing a scalable bit of research to see, does it pencil out on a bigger scale? As David said, we have a big inventory, and you're constantly trying to find out what that balance is between developing your existing inventory and acquiring new land when you can. And so I think I'd like to, if there's a better mousetrap for that, let's take a look at it.
Okay, I skipped over Mr. Cole.
No, go ahead, let those guys go.
Yes, sir.
He wants to speak to us.
Yes, sir.
Last word.
Mr. Sternoff.
Thank you. In looking at this list, these aren't partnerships, really. I mean, these are standalone. I know some of these. I mean, I know all the towns here. Mm-hmm. But this is a little bit different type of view that I would look at. You know, each of us have mentioned in one way or another a stated demand or stated need by our constituencies for an aquatic center. We have indoor rec. You guys probably have the same need. There's a shortage of indoor space. And I could see a limited scope in terms of what we'd use something like this for, and it would be more of a regional approach or an intra-city approach to how we deal with some of the needs of our constituents. I mean, we're on each other's borders, and maybe for the larger projects, this is what we do, where it doesn't make sense for one of us to go do it and make it part of a grand plan, that says, there's a need for two facilities within this area, and we figure out how to go jointly share those costs for joint use. Just an idea, rather than go do the full meal deal and try and figure out how to, mow each other's lawns. So.
Mr. Myers?
We have an existing parks levy. How would that be affected, and the money that's coming in from that be affected by a district, a joint district? And then secondly, Bob was talking about mowing each other's lawns. But can, if there are economies of scale or if there can be areas of cooperation, can we do that without having that as part of an MPD?
We could always sign some kind of
agreement. Yeah, I think through an interlocal agreement is probably the mechanism. If you weren't going to include it as part of MPD, then I think it would have to be an interlocal agreement. It should be done even now.
The MPD is a funding mechanism.
The more important question was how would our existing parks levies be affected by this?
It wouldn't necessarily. Do you have a maintenance levy or a capital? Yeah. If you continue to have in your city a parks department and a park system, and you are levying a tax to maintain those, then you would keep that in place. If we were all going to combine our parks and not be in the parks business anymore, then I'm not sure how that would all work. It seems like the purpose for which that park levy was levied does no longer exist for the city, and you wouldn't continue to levy it. If you have voter approved indebtedness, that would stay in place because you'd have to retire your debt. So it sort of depends. I mean, if you were going to combine your whole park district, your park system, you'd need to look at things like, well, whose assets are they? Do the assets go to the park district? For anything that you build jointly for your whatever levy you create to build it, you also want to create a levy to operate it if indeed there's a subsidy that needs to be in place.
or is it going to be self-supporting? So there's all those elements that you need to bring to bear. So I have to say, it all depends, I'm sure. And that really big idea of replacing the park, our community's park systems with the Metropolitan Park District would beg a number of questions.
Okay,
I think I was going to say basically the same thing. It makes a lot of sense if you're talking about a large-scale regional facility like a aquatics facility to do something regionally and do it through one of these districts. I think trying to combine parks departments would create all sorts of complications that we haven't even started to think about, particularly because the cities have different philosophies about how their parks are. And all of a sudden, you're going to have to merge those philosophies and everything from trails to major neighborhood parks. You know, I think it would get extremely complicated to make the discussion go on forever if you tried to do a regular parks thing, combine the parks. The thing is, I'm not exactly sure I understand what the advantage is of a single city doing an MPD. You still have the taxing authority to create your own, your dedicated funding. We've done it. So I'm not sure what the advantage is of a city doing a parks.
You can do a levy lid lift. And let me, you're going to help me think this through, because the you get an additional, this is a different 75 cents than your own levy. The entire levy for your whole city has to stay within the statutory limit of, I don't know, it's $5.61 or something like that. But this 75 cents is on top of what your city levy would be. So, it depends on how much capacity. You probably have lots of capacity left in your levy rate, as we do. It would be separate. It wouldn't, again, it wouldn't compete. Now, to the extent you have a special levy that's dedicated to parks, that's all it can be used for. The rules on how much that levy can increase per year is probably the same as your dedicated levy. It's that 1% or IPD, whichever is less. So you do have limits on its growth potential. I think that probably still applies to any of these districts. It's a great question. It is part of it is a governance, perhaps a governance advantage that you have jointly. We have joint ownership, joint interest in one facility, and then you don't, because otherwise, who owns it if it's an interlocal? Who owns it?
Thank you very much. Mr. Cole.
I'd like to go back to where Mr. Asher was. I'd like to see us move forward with a small version. Let's not build a whole huge mousetrap here. But an issue of looking at a common facility. I think the Aquatic Center was what we talked about last time. It's what our council's talking about. You said $42.5 million. I think our number is $46.5 million, so we're certainly in the ballpark. And ask if other people agree to come back with sort of a little finite look at this. And to answer one of your questions, Mayor, you can go ahead and do the capital and then change it to furnish you the money for maintenance, too. So you could, come up with the $40 million and then plus $1 million a year, whatever it took to maintain it. So you could structure it that way. But
yes, ma'am. I could just ask clarification. So are we talking not a pool-only facility, not aquatic center-only, but a facility that we have pools
million.
And community centers?
Huh? We What's in your 40?
We talk indoor recreation.
Indoor recreation, including the pools.
Yes.
Yeah. So is...
Curly? Yes.
Are both councils agreed that would be an interesting exercise for our staff?
I don't have anything else.
Mm-hmm. Shake your head, yes,
Jean. Ours is more expensive because it includes bocce.
We
might like bocce.
Indoor?
Okay, so that sounds like a great idea, and we'll get started on that. Thank you very much,
Jenny.
The next item on our agenda is the Human Services and Funding Needs. And we have Carrie Hyde, our Deputy Director of Kirkland Parks and Community Services, and Colleen Kelly, Redmond Human Services Manager. Welcome.
Thank you. Welcome, everybody. We're here to talk about the Metropolitan Human Services District. Human Services funding and needs. And after we get done with this, you might want to talk about that. Just kidding. We have many challenges facing us in our human services funding needs in the community for our nonprofit agencies that are serving our citizens. We have a list of some of the challenges. We have state funding, which isn't on here. We are feeling some impacts of the state funding. King County funding, United Way funding has diminished a little bit. Philanthropic funding, if you read your memo that we gave you, there are some evidence, there's some evidence of philanthropic and corporate giving that has gone down quite a bit. We also have increased need in our community. We're going to talk a little bit about that tonight to paint a picture for you. We also have an increased jobless rate. Poverty is continuing to increase, and we have some demographic challenges ahead of us. Our funding, our current funding and our future funding. We have, for Kirkland, our 2009-2010 current funding, $1.1 million. And for Kirkland, for Redmond, it's $1.3 million. Out of that, Kirkland funds 46 different nonprofit programs, and Redmond funds 48. This year, what you guys, you council members, will see in front of you when it comes funding time is that our requests have gone up dramatically. For Kirkland, we are seeing funding requests for $750,000, funding 72 different programs. And for Redmond, it's close to $2.1 million. If you look at that, the funding request, and you compare that to what was requested in 2009 and 10, what was allocated in 2009 and 10, and then what was requested and for 2011 and 12, and for the expected funding for 2011 and 12, we both, Kirkland and Redmond, said, okay, if we stayed at flat funding, this is what it would look like. What's noticeable on this is the gap that exists between the amount that's requested, which in some ways does demonstrate the need in the community, the need from our nonprofits to be able to serve our citizens, and the amount of funding we're able to allocate. So let's paint a little picture about what's going on in our community. We'd really like you to have a good sense of what our nonprofits are experiencing, what our citizens are experiencing, and then we're going to talk a little bit about kind of our joint efforts that we're working on for human services. And Colleen's going to talk a little bit about the impact in the community.
So we just pulled together a few of the data points that demonstrate why the increased demand is coming from the nonprofits, in addition to the decreases in funding that they're experiencing from all of the various funding sources they have to work with. They're at the same time experiencing an increase in demand from residents for services. And these are some of the reasons why that is. These data points are taken from the United Way Basic Needs Assessment that they update quite regularly. I think they do an update every month for data points that they can do that with. And this was pulled just Friday. So this is as current as they were able to get for these particular information points. So the first one is about employment and the number of employees that have been laid off in Washington State from 2004 through 2009, and obviously the critical time period there is from 2007 to 2008, you start to see a slight increase, both at the county and the state level, and then look at the jump from 2008 to 2009. I'm sure that won't surprise anyone in the room. It's not new news to anyone, but it is an increase of about 2.5 times if you look at the numbers from start of 2008 to the end of 2009. Emergency assistance requests, these come through the 211 information line. And one of the things that we'll be talking about at another event that we're doing later this month or early in June is the impact of the state funding cuts on that system. And that is a centralized referral system statewide that's used to help people access these services. So 211 is being diminished, I guess, in terms of its ability to be open, numbers of hours and numbers of days because of funding cuts. But the increased need for their services, both in terms of access to information and the services that they're referring people to, are demonstrated here. So if you look at from the first quarter of 2007, what you see is that the the request for utility and rent assistance from individuals has doubled from the beginning of 2007 into 2008. And as the 2009 data is coming in, it's still climbing a little bit. Not as much, but still climbing. TANF applications. TANF is the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families. That's a program operated at the state level. This doesn't look dramatic on the graph, but if you look from the beginning of 2007, which unfortunately isn't on the chart to see, the total increase is 25% in terms of the number of people that have applied for temporary assistance for needy families from the beginning of 2007 to the end of 2008. And the next one is also about TANF, and it's showing that although the applications are leveling off, the caseloads are continuing to increase, and the reason for that is that people are staying on the program longer. So their ability to become self-sufficient and move off of the TANF services is more challenging. Goes back to the employment situation and a number of the other economic indicators that we are all familiar with. And then finally, a real common and sad reality is the increase in food assistance that's being required across the county. And this particular graph is showing both King County and Seattle. And where Seattle has always had a higher rate in terms of absolute numbers of people trying to access food through food banks, what you also see there is that across the rest of King County, over the course of 2008 and into the fourth quarter of 2009, the rest of the county is basically caught up now with Seattle, which is not a statistic that is good news for us. And not on the slide, but other information that we know in terms of food insecurity in the county and across the state is that applications for basic food assistance through the state for food stamps have increased 78% across the county since 2008, but they've gone up over 100% in East King County. And I was just hearing about that from the East King County CSO officer at our DSHS office, and that was striking to me that there was a greater increase on the east side. Thanks, Colleen.
So the city of Kirkland and the city of Redmond work together collaboratively in human services as well as the city of Bellevue. We have a lot of current joint efforts that we're participating in that have been an asset to both of our cities and all of our citizens. One of those in particular efforts is the Eastside Human Services Forum. And tonight, Councilmember Vache sits on the executive board of the Eastside Human Services Forum, as well as Mayor McBride. The Human Services Forum has been key to the Eastside in creating a human service legislative agenda and being able to create some advocacy in the state at the state level. They've been key in sitting and being represented in United Way on our United Way committees, advocating for funding for the Eastside. The Eastside Human Services Forum has supported the annual Mayor's Day of, or Mayor's Month of Concern for the Hungry, the annual food drive that all of our cities participate in the fall. They've supported the formation of the Eastside Refugee and Immigrant Coalition to respond to the needs of the increasing immigrant and refugee population in our communities. They have been key in supporting the formation of a new program in our community, the Eastside Time Bank. It's in its founding year, and some of you probably know about that. Some of you may not, and be more than happy to fill you in. They've been key in forming the Eastside Cares, and both the Time Bank and the Eastside Cares were in response to a recession-related effort, and it came up in kind of a local way in Kirkland, and then was able to have some support from the Eastside Human Services Forum to do an Eastside-wide effort of those two programs. In addition, one of the major efforts for the Eastside Human Services Forum is continuing to work with our nonprofits and our local elected officials, and also to work for solutions for long-term stable funding for human services. And to that end, we have been working with King County, with the state, trying to advocate for funding. We've been all along, including all of the elected officials on the east side, and trying to create a good sense, strong support for human services in our community. And we've been working on several different ideas to try to figure out a new, better way, not dependent on tax dollars, to be able to fund human services. So we're in process on that, not ready to roll it out in any sense, form, fashion, but we are, it's one of those issues that we tackle. So if anybody has any great ideas, we'd sure welcome them. In addition to the Eastside Human Services Forum, we also, all of our cities, Redmond and Kirkland included, participate on the Eastside Homeless Advisory Committee. And the Eastside Homeless Advisory Committee is a subcommittee of the 10-year plan in homelessness, the King County Homelessness Plan. We've made some great progress through ARCH and through development of housing on the east side. We also have been participating in quarterly roundtables with our commissions, learning more about human services and our nonprofits, efficiencies, ways to do things better, and our commissions come together and work together. We participate in the eCityGov joint application process. It gives our nonprofits and all of our communities an avenue to apply online to submit one application that applies for all the city's funding. We also participate in a pooled funding allocation model. So there are certain, there's an amount of agencies that service all of our cities on the east side, and so we pool our money. We have an intergovernmental contract. The city of Bellevue oversees the financial part of that, but we're able to pool our money and fund those agencies, and it creates some efficiencies at that level for all of those agencies. Included in our current joint efforts, the Eastside Human Services Forum does try to do an annual educational forum that would be helpful for our councils in their decision-making process for human services and to really know what is happening in our communities. And so coming up on June 3rd, I'd like to formally invite you all to attend the Economic Argument for Investing in People, What Eastside Leaders Need to Know. It's on June 3rd, 7:30 to 9:30 at Mercer View Community Center, sponsored by the Eastside Human Services Forum. Would love to have your attendance at that educational forum. So with that, we just wanted to do a quick brief presentation, paint a picture for you, tell you what's coming down the pike with funding requests for our nonprofits, and open it up for some discussion and questions.
Councils?
Yes, sir. Mr. Karras.
Well, I had a quick question for Colleen about the graph that you showed, and I guess what I'm wondering is the correlation of increase in population in the county versus Seattle, because we could be increasing, I mean, the growth is happening in the outside of Seattle typically. I mean, some growth is happening in Seattle, but the majority of, you know, single family homes and things like that are being built in outside of Seattle. So I guess the question is the population increasing to the point where that increase in need might make a little more sense, or is it, I mean, obviously it's going up independent of that, but I guess I would be curious about that.
Yeah, I'm not sure I have that analysis handy, but I think it's probably both and. I mean, it's a little hard to imagine that the economic realities aren't having the impact as well.
Of course.
And the upshot is that regardless of where the increased demand is coming from, agencies are struggling to try to meet it as their resources are going down. So that's the bottom line stays the same, kind of regardless of why the numbers are up.
Ms. Greenway and Mr. Marchison.
Can you give us a check-in on the 10-year plan to end homelessness? Are we on track to end homelessness in the 10-year time frame that was planned?
Got a year left, huh?
We are not. The recession really added numbers to the homeless population the past 2 years, and I know that there's been some pretty aggressive plan by King County and also the east side. We've added a lot, but we're not on track.
And we're 5 years in. It's halfway done.
Mr. Murchison?
Well, just to answer Mr. Carson's question, one of the things Suburban City shared with us a couple months ago was that over the last 10 to 15 years, two-thirds of the growth have occurred in suburban cities, and one-third of the growth has occurred in Seattle. So there may be a little bit of that, but I think also you had less folks looking for food support, even if they were in the suburban east side areas or non-Seattle areas. Those folks are not feeling a pinch.
Mr. Sternum?
Yeah, I'd be curious to see the change in the demographic of folks that are asking for assistance. I'd just be curious if there's any change over time, and that may change perhaps the way that we look at this.
Yeah, just anecdotally, again, I don't have data in front of me, but what we've heard from our providers is the how striking it is the number of people that are coming in for services that have never accessed services before, and how challenging it is for them to make that change. And the number of people who have said, 2 years ago I was volunteering here, and now I need the food or I need the shelter support or whatever.
Also, families versus singles.
Absolutely.
You know, be curious to see just to make sure that we're on the same track and we're not doing things the way that we've always done them when the demographics change.
Those first-timers usually wait too late. They've got things being shut off, and by the time they reach out,
it's in total crisis mode.
I'd like to ask a question. Does staff have some other ideas of how we might be able to work together as cities to help provide services, to help with food security, because as we see these numbers rise, that's the threshold of, you know, the amount of pain in our neighborhoods and in our communities is going up, and that hurts everyone. And so I'm interested in new ideas, and I'm hoping that things will come out at the forum early in June, but anything that we can do is definitely of interest to me. Mr. Vache.
Yeah, I thought I would take that lead in and give Carrie an opportunity to tell us again about the June 30 event. I think it would be a good time to maybe talk about a challenge match here.
Ooh.
See whether we can get all members of council to the June 3rd breakfast for both cities.
Well done. Yes,
I can take the bus.
Wow. But Carrie, a lot of work goes into putting this thing on. I don't know if you have.
It does, and we're going to have some similar statistics that we presented today and more, and we're going to talk about the impact of what human services does in our community. And so for you, that when you get in front of your budgets in the fall and you struggle with those really difficult choices because the economy's bad and the funds are down, it gives you a bigger picture of how human services is connected to prevention, who's connected to police and criminal justice costs, and you can have a more of a global picture of how that all connects and make some more informed decisions around human service funding as well. So that's the focus of it, and we really want we've invited all of the Eastside City elected officials. We have some state representatives that will be joining us as well, some King County Council members that will be joining us as well. So would love to see your participation.
I saw Mr. Marcheson and then Ms. Allen.
Well, you're right. Funding is challenged, to put it mildly. And it's not just public funding. Private funding, foundations are suffering, and you hear about it all the time. So I'm really interested in this Eastside Time Bank and as a way of providing service without always, you know, finding money. Uh-huh. There has to be other ways to attack this problem versus just saying we need more money. And you may run into a situation where there just isn't any more money available. I mean, we're seeing it with both cities, and you're not alone. We're not alone. I mean, I'm sure every other community in this area and in the country are in the same situation. Uh-huh. You're twice as many needs as there are resources. Uh-huh. So how do we then find new resources that aren't financial, uh-huh, that may be other ways of doing things? And maybe that's what we'll talk about on the 3rd, and I will make every effort to be there. I've been issued a challenge.
I just wanted to comment. I appreciated the question from Mayor McBride about other ideas staff might have, but we'd be really interested in ideas you have, because rest assured that this is what we're thinking about all the time, trying to find more creative ways to do what we can better with what we have, which is getting smaller. And time banking is one idea. The long-term funding ideas that we're tossing around and trying to delve into is another. The pooled funding created a lot of efficiencies for both agencies and staff, and we've tried to expand that, and I think we've got that about at capacity without putting more money into that. So we're on it, we're interested, and we'd like to work any ideas other people have as well. So
we've
thinking. But
we've also started to talk more about what if we leveraged, you know, Bellevue and Redmond and Kirkland and went after more grants. We don't really qualify for grants as individual cities. So is there a way we can leverage, you know, the East Side to be able to qualify for more federal grants to help human services? There was an article, Colleen and I both saw it, and we met at a meeting yesterday and said, oh, I saw that article too. But there was an article in the paper about Change for Change, and there were parking meters put all over downtown in Denver, and there was another city, and it was red parking meters. It wasn't to park. It was just for people to randomly put their change for change, to make change in their community. So ideas like that, innovative, out-of-the-box, creative, things that we could do on a government level, tools that we could have in governments that nonprofits don't have to be able to raise funds. Not to compete with our nonprofits, but to be more innovative and use the tools and the leverage that we have as cities.
Ms. Allen?
Well, looking to mine another source of ideas, because I agree with Mr. Martinson, you know, just putting more money into it is, there's an end to that. You know, you max out. But one of the things that we in the city of Redmond did was to form a human services commission to advise the council in a more in-depth way about human service needs and actually do some of that brainstorming. And I don't know what Kirkland does on that front, but just wanted to share that we're looking forward to some to having this group of citizens be able to dig deeper than we could possibly do as council members to give us some really cogent advice. And if you have such a body here in Kirkland, then I would think it would be interesting to have the two groups maybe meet to see if there are any crossover points or you know, just to get all those brains in the room together.
So one of those slides that are joint efforts, we are doing some quarterly roundtables with all of the commissions. So your commission is involved as well as Kirkland and talking.
And we do a lot of discussions around when it comes time to make funding allocation recommendations so that the recommendations that we're making make sense in the context of the whole puzzle that agencies are trying to put together with the money they get from Bellevue and the money they get from Kirkland and the money they get from Redmond. It's all got to add up to make the thing happen that they're trying to do. So we've got to kind of talk to each other to make sure that our $5,000 makes sense, because it might not if they don't get the $15,000 from the other two cities, that kind of thing.
Mr. Marcheson?
Well, just, you know, I said there is an end. You know, eventually people are going to run out of money to give. But, and I don't know if you've probably gone down this road before, but just a thought, because you asked for ideas, right?
Come on.
So I'm going out there and don't shoot the messenger. But every time my wife, because I don't do it, but my wife renews our car tabs, she donates money to parks. Mm-hmm. Is there, I mean, obviously you need state legislation to make that work, but that might be something to consider doing. Would you be willing to give whatever, a dollar or five or whatever for human services?
Oh, it requires four votes to put it on your utility bill.
Mm-hmm. We have it on our utility bill.
Mm-hmm.
Optional.
That's just an idea.
Great. Well, and also along that line, business licenses and any licenses.
Any license.
Issues, yeah.
Oh, cool.
So, Kirkland Council, I think we have been challenged to be at the Eastside Human Services Forum in June. What's on the line, Mr.
I'm already
Richard?
Signed up. Oh. Well, I don't know. It could be something like Dave Carson's a great cook.
Lake House.
Yes, sir.
One other thing. I'm never politically correct, but our friends in King County are mucking around as we speak, literally. And what I read in the paper today, and granted this is preliminary, but they're looking at making our problem even worse. Mm-hmm. And I find that really frustrating because their solution for their funding issue has been known for at least 3 years that Suburban Cities has been trying to work with them. Mm-hmm. But anyway, they don't know what they're going to do yet, but next time we talk about this, we may realize that the problem's getting worse.
Mr. Stillen?
You know, one of the things we did recently, some members of the Executive Leadership Council at HopeLink got together to do a study on how to provide a more continuous supply of food into the food banks. And I think one of the things we discovered out of that is when you get into organizations and agencies, they get pretty heads down and mission critical, and they never really get a chance to look above and see what's going on in the world. And we went and toured an organization called Food Lifeline and found out there were stacks of food waiting to be distributed. And, you know, I'll say that our epiphany at this meeting, and this may have changed, this may not be accurate, was for lack of a truck, there wasn't food going to food banks. And I just wonder if something that we can do as a government body or with our boards is help agencies with expertise or get them to walk away from the office for 2 days just to say, take some time off, the world will go on, but help them think about things where there may be opportunities for more efficiencies and regionalization of things, because I realize they're out there being effective in delivering what they want to do, but in this case we missed something that existed for food banks, and I just wonder if there may be other opportunities. And that seems like a natural thing for somebody, you know, like a United Way gets in looking how to streamline processes, how to streamline giving and whatnot. And I just wonder if we're taking advantage of resources like that.
Mm-hmm. Good thought. I'm sure not in every case.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure there's more that could be done.
I'm really interested in the idea of the three cities working together to go after those bigger federal grants. And that's one of the things I think that the Eastside Human Services is really good at, is getting a united message out and getting us all educated up to a certain level so that we can be those advocates and champions. And I'll just throw out one of my personal things that I would love to see on the east side, except I just don't know if there's a need, and I've seen it in Seattle, and I was just so amazed at the work that they did, and it's the hygiene centers. And I'm not sure if our communities would be open to that idea, but we have capacity right now here in our cities. Any place where we have a shower, a pool, where there's showers, et cetera, where there's water hookups, we have the potential to do a hygiene center. I'm just not sure if the need is that great here as it is in Seattle, but it's something that's been appealing to me after touring in Seattle. So I think I think we've been asked by the city of Redmond to see how many we can get out there, and we'll figure out some.
We'll work on the prize after we find out who
wins. That's such a good idea.
I'll get back to you.
Right. Work at Sir La Table cooking class or something like that.
So are there some other...
Turkey trot and average it out.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
Right. Fair start.
Well, I know our local teen centers have a big football game around Thanksgiving, and they pass around a trophy. You might want to just get a trophy, pass it around, right. Pass it back and forth.
There you go.
How about a wine cask?
Yeah.
Any other?
Yeah, you're full, Dave.
You got to return it full?
Okay. There you go. Any other parting comments? We'll see you all at the forum then.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. That's good.
Thank you. We are holding time really well. This is just amazing. The next issue on our agenda is partnership opportunities, and there really is no presentation for this, but it's something that we've talked about 2 years ago when we got together. How might we partner otherwise? We've talked about human services, and we've talked about the Metropolitan Park District and the Aquatic Center, but there are other ways to partner, and there might be some other ideas, and that's kind of our last topic. So any thoughts, any ideas? Yes, ma'am.
Well, let's see. Do you have a striping machine?
We have a button truck.
Do we have a button truck?
don't think so.
You know, I think we can be as little as we want to be on this, but I really do think that there are probably opportunities, and my brain kind of goes to public works for some efficiencies and for some sharing. We've been kind of batting this around for a while as we try to deal with our budget challenges. Don't know if you guys are having those same kinds of conversations, but it does feel to me like there's some opportunity where we can share some resources.
Yes, sir.
Well, we've had a recent annexation up in the Rose Hill area, and it likely means that we'll have another church in that area. And this is one thing I'm concerned about is the infrastructure at 132nd being insufficient to support. And it's not just Sundays. It could be, you know, many days. Commute times, obviously, when meetings are starting to happen. But I think that is an area where we share the border, where we need our public works folks to really look at planning for that expansion and growth that's going to happen. A lot of it on our side in the annexed area, and I don't know exactly what Kirkland's side looks like, but there's probably potential parcels there that are ripe for redevelopment. So it's just, you know, that area seems to be really growing quickly, and those are going to be. I mean, we already have a lot of complaints from folks that live there because they have a difficult time getting in and out, mm-hmm. and that's with two churches and there's potentially a third. So it's something I just think we should be thinking about as that starts to build out a little bit.
Get prepared, huh?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
After you complete your annexation, do you have any King County left? Or is it this pretty much takes it up?
This is it.
I think they go out of business.
Right on, Dave.
We're done.
Where do I sign up? Well, I was thinking particularly we have argued or discussed for years of trying to work with the county and take over some of their permitting processes because, A, we're staffed to do it and they're not. B, ultimately that area comes into the city of Redmond. So anyway, that's really not an issue. I thought maybe there'd be something there we could work on. Oh, okay.
I think there's still a couple of isolated little parcels along 132nd.
We have a couple.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I don't think we do.
There's a couple of other opportunities, and I have a little list here if we want to talk about any of them. One is our eGov Alliance, and that has my building permits and my parksandrecreation.com, which we participate in with the city of Bellevue and some other cities. It's been very, very successful. Another that your mayor actually brought forward to me and I believe a few other people is perhaps the notion of starting a suburban cities sort of northeast caucus. As most of you know, the South has a very organized suburban cities caucus, and they are wonderfully powerful. As Mayor Marchione was pointing out, that you know the north end cities don't meet quite as much to discuss our common interests in suburban cities. So that's one notion. Also, the animal services sub-regional model. Yes. Not this time, but it's around the corner.
I haven't seen the final price tag yet, so.
Well, we've gotten pretty close to it, I believe. But definitely something to look forward to in the future as we might be getting into the dog catching business.
I think look forward is the wrong term, but but yes,
let us know how it works out.
And of course, we talked about the indoor rec pool, and also there's the notion of participation in NORCOM, which is out there. If any of those are of interest to you. So perhaps you have some other ideas of how we might coordinate work together. Oh wow, okay. Well, I saw Mr. Vache, Ms. Allen, and then Mr. Cole.
Well, I can think of two others, and one of them, we almost share a boundary with our school district. There's probably things that we could do to invite the school district. For instance, we have all these facilities. our parks facilities, that somehow we ought to be able to figure out between the three of us how to better share those publicly paid for facilities. Another thing that we're working on is we are in the midst of doing an economic development strategy. Sooner or later, and the people who are working on that realize that it has to be more of a regional commitment. It can't be a Redmond, and I think I know you guys have an economic development thing going on. Sooner or later, those things have to get at least loosely tied together in the cooperative place. So there's two things that we could at least keep on the table.
Very good. Ms. Allen.
Well, I just wanted to say that I'm very interested in looking at a Northeast caucus for suburban cities. I know Councilmember Sternoff and I turn up at many of the same meetings on growth management and transit, and certainly our interests don't align with the southern cities on a very regular basis. So the notion's intriguing, and in your observation about the power that they've been able to aggregate as a result of a little bit more organization is interesting. So I'd be interested in pursuing that.
Sweet.
I think in addition to the economic development process, I have to always throw this in, but I think there are tourism opportunities out there for all of us. I chair the LTAC for the city of Kirkland, and one of the things that we've really come to a conclusion about is the fact that we alone are not a full meal deal. And I think that's probably true for most of us out here. We've got hotels spread throughout. We've got, you know, the huge draw that Woodinville has. Woodinville has no place for anybody to stay, you know, with a couple of exceptions. But I think that this is an opportunity for us to build something that looks more like a full meal deal and can be marketed nationally in terms of making us a bigger draw. More talk on that I would like to do.
Ms. Greenway?
I think that's a great idea, but my comment was going to be if we did form the Northeast Suburban Cities Caucus, would there ever be any hope of having a suburban cities meeting in the North or the East?
I think that would be our first sign of success.
Yeah.
I just think there would be a lot more participation from the North and the East.
We've
if
done
the meetings
North caucuses
weren't
before.
Always held
have.
Where they are.
No, we.
It has been a while, and it's been a while since we've had like dinner meetings that are dispersed throughout the suburban cities area, other than on the east side. And we understand that there are economic reasons for that, but it does kind of shut down discussion a bit.
Bring it up here, it wouldn't cost $50, I can tell you that.
Some other, yes, sir, Mr. Stone.
As Kim said, we see each other pretty regularly, as well as other people in the room at different things here. And I find that we work very well together. I find that our interests are if not the same, very similar. And very rarely do I see, you know, a problem communicating with the Redmond Council on issues that, you know, we need something done about. And the idea of having some of the Northeast cities, and I know that I personally have been approached by Kenmore, I believe Waffle as well, Woodinville, not yet. You know, I don't know where they're at, but they're in Woodinville. That's pretty much, yeah. So, and probably Lake Forest Park, and I think that, you know, we have an opportunity to probably get together, and that may be something that we may want to do, is just have a meeting amongst, you know, the three or four cities that may have a interest. You know, it's, I know it's hard to put together this group, but it, as we move forward, there are issues that are going to keep us apart from our brethren in the South, and our brethren across the lake. So, you know, I could see some good things coming out of that, as well as some other opportunities for partnerships. You know, and other things that we've talked about tonight. You know, the folks that are on common borders. So,
Some other ideas or thoughts? Yes, sir.
Do I have a list between the cities of what's in our mutual interests? And from that standpoint, you know, if we do something out on 40th Street, on 520 Kirkland Price, what's going on? But it may actually be in both cities' mutual interest to do something there, or even on the 85th intersection, there may be things like that. So I'm just wondering if there's a list of places where we can look at and say, as these projects come up, these are the opportunities for us to connect, because they are where we will both benefit from something. And I'm not thinking win-win or lose-lose. I'm thinking of things that it's really good for the two cities for this one thing to happen.
I think that's a good idea. Yes, sir.
Well, along those lines, I'm just curious how close the coordination between, I mean, obviously there has to be some because we share a border and we have streets to maintain up to a certain line. But, you know, when we start talking about reconfiguring intersections, and do the public works folks, I know we have a few here, how often do they interface, and do they think of more in a strategic way going forward? It would just be good to know that. I'm probably sure that they are doing this, but it's nice to be assured of those things. So
we actually have our interim director here, and I'm sure he could speak to that, but I know that we worked very hard on 85th in some mutual coordination. But I think that that's something we can always improve on and be strategic about. Mr. Cole.
Well, that was one of the things I was thinking of. I know we used to have an agreement with Bellevue called Brotts. And it expires, I think, next year sometime. Remember that?
Makes me hungry.
Yeah, it's not spelled the barbecue one.
Spelled a little different.
Not that. But what I've talked to some Bellevue Council about, and one of the things I want to throw on the table tonight is just an interlocal sort of roads agreement between particularly the three cities, because the boundary's just, I don't know here, but certainly in Redmond and Bellevue. Unless you're a junkie, you don't even know what city you're in most of the time as you drive up in the Sears area up there. But it would just sort of pre-address a process, so when we work on 85th again, or when we work on 40th with Bellevue, or when we work on something else. So I'd like to see a formal agreement that, you know, who's going to be on first to just facilitate the administration of transportation.
Well, here's a question. Do we still use for planning purposes that BRK system?
BKR.
BKR? Oh, okay. The Bellevue, Redmond, Kirkland.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Still measures traffic, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we have a lot in common. Yes, sir.
One area, and of course, with the 40-40-20 split of metro services being somewhat under siege, but also I have been on several East Side sounding boards with Metro Transit, and interestingly enough, they have been set up so that they include two but not three partners. Typically it would be Bellevue and Redmond, but sometimes it's Redmond and Kirkland, and I think that there is we have some common corridors and some common flows where traffic makes really good connections. I was taking the bus across 520, and I noticed at the Evergreen Point Bridge that there are 20 bus routes that actually stop at that point and provide interconnections. Some of them are coming, like the 540, come from Kirkland, and people from the 545 switch back and forth. And so I think that may be another area where we can work together, and that is developing mass transit.
Mutual needs.
I would echo that.
Whatever the new law is.
You beat me to the punch.
Okay.
Well, we're very lucky that on the new metro trans is it.
You have two of us. You have Kim.
Oh, that's right.
Both of us are on it, so we're representing.
Okay. On the regional transportation.
Yeah. So we need to talk more. Yes, sir. Did you have a...
That was my point.
Okay.
I'd like to ask the Redmond Council, does your public works staff give you regular updates about the Metropolitan Solid Waste Management Advisory Committee activities? Ms. Wack?
No. It comes to Regional Policy Committee.
Well, she's the Planning and Public Works Committee Chair.
Oh, I love this. I like this. I'm loving this.
Zing, zing, zing.
As I look to the staff seat over there, it hasn't come before the committee yet.
Well, I should talk to Kim, but I'm the chair of that, and it is a group of all of the cities that are part of the King County Solid Waste system. And we are doing long-term planning for both the modernizing the transfer station system, the King County Transfer Station system, and Kirkland is very invested in that because we are a host city. Our little outdated transfer station processes 25% of the solid waste of the entire county. And so, you know, we're very interested in having that transfer station be replaced by a more modern and properly sited one, which is part of the transfer station plan, system plan. And we're also planning for what happens when Cedar Hills landfill fills up. You know, what do we do with the King County solid waste when that happens? And so your public works staff attends those meetings, and I would love to invite you to attend every now and then and be part of that process.
Well, I certainly will accept that challenge, Councilmember Greenway.
Thank you.
And we'll pass the direction to our public works staff to see Ms. Christensen nodding there that that my committee is long overdue for an update, apparently. Mm-hmm. And Ms. Christensen, you want to address that, maybe?
Just a quick word on behalf of Redmond. We give periodic updates to our council on a whole host of regional issues. You'll recall solid waste is on the council's adopted regional issues agenda, and we cover those issues from time to time. We have perhaps less of an acute interest because we don't have a facility in Redmond, so that may be why it's perhaps not on the front burner, but an update is overdue.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Done.
Ms. Wallen?
I was just going to ask the status of, I understand that your plan is to purchase your section of the Redmond Spur off the BNSF corridor, and I wondered what your plans are for that.
Yes, it's our intent, and we don't know.
Good answer. Thank you.
Well, let me expand on that a little bit.
Yeah, talk to us.
You've received a lot of feedback.
Party has come in and offered us a deal to run a sort of a passenger tourist line from Woodinville to Redmond.
Well, from Redmond to Woodinville, or to Snohomish. Wow.
Well, and then they're working on another leg of that that goes from Woodinville up to the city of Snohomish. Of course, we haven't even bought the railroads yet.
Right.
But the staff, the council has provided a whole bunch of questions to our attorney who's working on this, and it's coming up as we speak, isn't it, Pat? Or that's what you're going to find out.
Yeah, we'll have a conversation either tomorrow or Thursday.
We're not going to get the answers, but we'll get a schedule.
And have you got much community feedback about what they'd like to see along there?
From Kirkland, we have.
Yes, everybody's
No,
seriously, there's a group called the East Side Trail Association, and everybody that responded was virtually from Kirkland.
I think 9 of 12 in the month that I was the ombudsman were from Kirkland. So,
yeah, they've got a very well-organized group along with, I think they're part of the Cascade Bicycle Club or they're related.
No idea who they are. No,
they're good.
I don't know who they are.
Anyway, they have been bombarding us wanting to go bikes only. There's another group of people come in, we want commuter rail. There's another people want to come in, want freight. That's what we're going to be.
Yeah, but it's also the southern terminus of that thing we have is a whole different concept of what it is.
And that's what I was going to talk about. Our 5 mile length, I think that's what it is. We bought 5 miles of track, roughly. That basically is the city limit to city limit, essentially.
You own it outright?
Not yet.
We will.
It hasn't closed.
No, Mr. Buffett was in Redmond the other day. He didn't sign the contract.
Didn't sign.
The area through the downtown, the track through the downtown, we've identified as the potential site for light rail, should it come into Redmond at some future date.
When?
When it comes into Redmond at some future date.
They'll have to have wheels.
And then we hadn't really even had any formal discussions up until, you know, earlier this year about, you know, downtown north. And that's when this group came in and talked to us about some ideas that they may have. I think if you look at the 10,000-foot view, our concept is we want to have a trail and rail, especially through the downtown area, you know, co-located, if we have the space to do that. How we do that, that remains to be seen. Going north, the proposal is to also jointly have rails and trails alongside each other and coexisting. So we'll see.
I think you might be interested in hearing, because, you know, runs through here, runs through Bellevue. My perception that you've got so many crossings that continuing to use it as a rail line would be a real challenge.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Ms. Greenway and then Mr. Asher.
Well, I wanted to ask you, is your deal to purchase, is it dependent on what happened? No, okay.
Not dependent.
So you're doing that independently. Yeah. Do you mind my asking how you're going to fund the purchase?
Money's in the bank, $8 million. We've been working for this for my 20 years, maybe.
You have the money saved up.
Yes. We've been doing this for a long time.
Yeah. I think
putting it away. Yes.
You were working on this before I got there, Pat. So.
Yeah. Great. Good
really?
For you. Good for you guys. Wow.
Mr. Asher?
We can, two things I'd like to raise. First off, we could use your thoughtfulness for the long term. Is we'd like to see that light rail coming up toward our urban center, which is in Totem Lake. And there will be a mall there someday, guaranteed. It's going to be an urban center. So there are some things that, you know, it is as you think through your process to see how that might work, that I think could be helpful, because I don't see necessarily a link coming up inside Passage.
Passage up to Woodinville.
The outside passage would probably work better. But on a separate topic, I don't want to end the conversation on that topic. I want to move on to another one.
So I just like that. There's nothing more arcane and obscure than rail law. We've hired a specialist attorney to help advise us on this. And our own city attorney's been working on this for years and years and years. And I don't know if Robin's an expert on rail law.
Oddly, no.
But it is really so difficult to deal with. And we've been negotiating with the port and King County for years just to get this piece. And it's going to be closed manana sometime.
So, you also think that's one big piece of ownership, and it's a bunch of little ones. So lots of little pieces that have to go together to make that rail.
So being respectful of the time, we have just a few more minutes. Mr. Asher wanted to bring up another issue.
I'm wondering if your situation is similar to ours when we looked for emergency services coverage. In fire and emergency medical, we set up our system to serve the greatest number in Kirkland, and in our case with Fire District 41 to our north, which leaves the fringes a little sparsely covered in a number of instances. And I don't know if that's the case in Redmond. I don't know how you've cited your stations, but I'm wondering if it's worth looking at, and we largely do mutual aid very, very well. I'm wondering if there are some efficiencies that we could go to the next level to take and to take a look at how we cover places that aren't as well served as we want to be able to get to. And I know in our situation, the fringes are always the ones that have given us significant challenges.
Mr. Sternoff?
I was going to say NORCOM certainly gives us an opportunity to coordinate some of that. So should Redmond want to be involved in that?
Sometimes it's stationing.
Yeah.
Located.
Well, yeah.
Well, the other piece of it is that our chiefs meet regularly, and that seems to be something that would be ripe for discussion at that level as well.
More of the operational level.
Yeah, it sounds like
Well, and, you know, we do have some of the same problems with Fire District 34 in that, you know, there's nobody east of the district to help on the eastern side of the district. So, you know, at some point you're just kind of stuck for coverage. We obviously are building a new station up on 116, but that's not really much help to you, I wouldn't imagine. But, you know, I mean, as it densifies, you know, obviously we've seen the need to, because we have a lot of medical calls in that particular part of town. And really, obviously, the fire calls have gone, you know, keep going down and will keep going down as the materials get better and houses, you know, newer houses are built.
But in our case, the dollar loss is going up. Calls are going down with the dollar loss.
Sure. When they happen, they're pretty severe. Yeah.
We get a permit to build another.
We also, in our last public safety levy, were able to fund 24/7 emergency medical services at Fire Station 12, which is close to Kirkland. I know in my neighborhood in South Redmond that when something happens, it's a Bellevue truck that shows up.
Right.
And I think that our emergency services at 12 are also of some benefit to you as well.
Mm-hmm. You might plug the sprinklers, Ms. Allen.
Well, and I understand that your council just had some conversation. Mayor McBride and I went into a burning building together to research the whole sprinkler issue.
And I was totally against sprinklers until I was thrown into a burning building.
I agree. Good. And so we in Redmond, we passed it. We remain, I think, the only city in the state of Washington to require sprinklers of all new construction, single-family construction. And in terms of all of the horror stories that we've heard about it prior to passing our ordinance, we have not seen those come before. We're tweaking and refining some of our interface between Public Works and Fire so that the metering issue is less of an issue. But I can report success on this. And I'm sure Councilmember Cole, who also shared this vision with me as we brought it forward, could speak to that as well.
Well, you can bring Mary Alice back because she also went into the burning
That's
building.
That's right. It was Mayor McBride, myself, and Mary Alice Burley.
I really recommend you go there. You want to eliminate the problem of fires. It's going to take a few years, but it works.
Yeah. I'd just like to say that we narrowly defeated that ordinance, and we're going to look at that again in 6 months and a year. And
we narrowly deferred the discussion for 6 months.
Thank you. We'll be having the discussion again.
There was a wonderful video created of Mayor McBride and Mary Alice and myself during this process, and that's worth putting on
YouTube.
It turns out we burn well, actually. Yes, ma'am.
Well, I'd just like to ask a question. And someone from your fire department came and testified in favor.
Yes, our fire marshal.
Yeah. Has there been any downside at all? Have there been, has it meant...
We had an initial challenge with the metering aspect of it because right. Our public works was requiring upsizing of meters to meet the flow demands, where we found that really wasn't necessary because it was not something that you were going to regularly be making use of. It was an emergency fallback, and so we tweaked our metering standards around and came to. I might add, in our process, we had the development community at the table every step of the way in terms of going forward on the sprinkler ordinance and on some of the remediation on the metering issue later on. And they had some good feedback. And I think that we have resolved it to their satisfaction. I haven't been hearing from them, and generally that's my bellwether.
I think bringing the development group to the table would be an important thing. Ms. Sweet.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think we need to involve the development community and fire in those discussions. What I'm going to be interested in seeing, however, is data about the numbers of fires that you've experienced since instituting this and, you know, what's been the experience, how many fires, what are the outcomes?
I know of one up towards 80th, right, close to Grubbs House, where it's textbook. The part that was sprinklered was just minimal damage. The rest of the house was gone.
And minor smoke damage.
Minor smoke damage in the world.
And exactly.
There were we did find on the cost issue, that there were two significant ways where costs could be reduced. The first was in metering. And then the second, unfortunately, involves national fire standards in terms of being able to integrate the sprinkler system with the rest of plumbing and who puts it in and which union represents which group of people. And so there are some bureaucratic limitations at the national level which make further reductions. Either we have to go around them or we have to go through them. But that is a substantial, because there appears to be some substantial economies that are possible, but they simply are not being addressed.
Well, this is
the
helpful.
National code.
Well, and just to add that, our fire chief, Tim Fuller, and I went to the International Code Convention and testified, along with a number of others, on some of those very issues and actually to achieve the change nationwide, which was successful, in fact. So,
congratulations.
But it's not if it's when you do that. You will do it.
Yeah, that's kind of how I...
Yeah, exactly. So it can be done, and you can address your challenges.
The reason some of those changes would be helpful is we're always talking about new construction, but some of this could potentially be on a retrofit basis. But unfortunately, the expenses are so high that even if you wanted to do it, it would be a voluntary basis. But I looked into it for my house, and the expenses were simply overwhelming.
Mr. Stillen?
Well, I think it's one of those kind of problems where there's risk and reward associated with it, and you pay this cost up front, but the day it saves a life, that, you know, what's that worth? And so you look at that total cost to your community, and those are the things that may not pencil out. You know, you save one family, one kid, and is that a successful thing for your city? You know, does that make it worth it? So there's some, you know.
Well, we appreciate
no dollars on that.
We really appreciate the input. It's important to hear from a city that's, you know, instituted this and is $8,000. Feeling.
$8,000. Didn't we get it down to about $8,000 for an average house?
Yeah, I saw some of your invoices.
Yeah, on like a $750,000 house.
Yeah.
That was our benchmark.
So you're really not talking
so about 0.001 of the cost. Yeah.
So we'll be looking at involving the development committee or community, and we'll be looking at this again.
Even Mr. Panley, I think, supports.
So we are just a few minutes over our time, and I just want to be sure. City Manager, did we capture some of this, some of the things in this last section of possible things we could work on?
We have all kinds of things we can do together. Little money, a little staff time, we could do a lot of things. We'll follow up on some of these items, we'll coordinate and okay. Get back to you on some of them.
So I want to, on behalf of the council, I want to thank you all for coming today. We have a lot in common with Redmond, much more than just sharing a boundary. In many ways, we think alike. We have a shared philosophy on a number of issues. We're both very progressive, very forward-looking, very confident cities. We have hard-working professional staff that we're very proud of, and so we're just pleased as punch that you could be here tonight and to share some of your expertise and some of your ideas. And I love the idea that we are now in a challenge. Because it's on. It's on, Mr. Fashion. Thank you very much. And we're adjourned.